remembering those who have served on this Veterans Day. This holiday wasn't always called Veterans Day. It began as Armistice Day, the day fighting ended in World War I on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. Since 1954, it has been a day to honor American veterans of all wars. And that's what we're doing today, asking you to help us remember and honor veterans in your life. We'd especially love to hear about their impact on you. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Won't you join us in sharing your remembrances? We've already received this, a song written during World War II by Bill Bedard of Norway, Maine.
Oh, the moon was bright, and I thought I'd write a letter.
Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we're going to share the stories of Maine veterans. We invite those who have served, are serving, and friends and family of veterans to call into the program and tell us something memorable about their service or how a veteran you know has made an impact on your life. With me in the studio today, Peter Ogden, who is the former longtime director of Maine's Veterans Affairs. Dave Googins is president of the Maine Military Historical Society, and Lee Humiston, am I pronouncing that right,
yes,
Lee?
You are.
Great. Is museum curator at the Maine Military Museum and Learning Center. Thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
And of course, this is Maine Calling. We want to hear from you. Are you serving or have you served? Or do you have somebody's story that you've been researching and would like to share a little bit of? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mpbn.net. You can send a tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Peter Ogden, you're a famously good storyteller, and I know you've met thousands of Maine veterans. What story do you want to share with us today?
I'd like to talk about Henry, a World War II veteran that I had met. Henry actually served in World War II in Korea, and what especially about Henry, Henry was an engineer. He was a bridge guy. His unit was the 150th Engineer Battalion that was formed at Fort Devens, Massachusetts, from all New England people. Henry's unit served with Patton's Third Army, and they built over 150 bridges for Patton. And Henry was unique because on one mission, he was a boat captain and taking soldiers across the Mosel River in Germany to fight the enemy and bringing the wounded back. And in the middle of this process, all of his help was wounded. So Henry was then with a boat full of wounded people trying to get it back across the river, and actually had to take his clothes off and swim and push the boat back from back that, but went on like that. And Henry was awarded the Silver Star from the United States and also the British Military Medal of Merit. And what I talked to Henry about was unique because General Patton signed the award letter, but also Bernard Montgomery signed it. And we kind of joked a lot about General Patton's name was on the top and much bigger than Field Marshal Montgomery's, because they used to have a lot of angst about each other during the war. So it was kind of unique talking to Henry about that. So.
Did you get to see it?
Yes, I did. It was very interesting talking to him. And the stories, but I could talk for hours about all the people I met. But Henry's one of those guys that really you wouldn't know much about him until you talked to him. And actually, he just looked like somebody that was, you know, in their 80s and 90s, you know, like that. And once in a while, he'd wear his Army hat or military hat but didn't really talk about his story at all. He just, until we started talking to him and helping him with a project and stuff, that's how I met him. So.
That's a wonderful story. Lee, yeah. Your turn.
Well, I was born and raised in South Portland. The day I turned 17, 1956, I left. I didn't come home for 50 years. I came home in 06, and I wanted to do something for my city and my state, and I started a little small museum that grew into a 6,000-square-foot building in South Portland, which we have just started today. There's people all over the place for it. It's been a lot of fun. But my story that means the most to me, I've just done, and we just opened the Vietnam War section of the museum, and there's a young man by the name of Peter Kane who served two combat tours in Vietnam. And he doesn't have post-stress, but he does have problems like most people do that went through the war. And he came in, and he brings things, he does things. And the museum survives solely by selling plaques. They're 5 inches by 4 inches, and they're military plaques with their history. So I did one for Peter, but he told me about a friend of his who had been killed trying to rescue him in one combat situation. So to surprise him, I put them together. Peter sat in front of those for an hour, hour and a half, never said a word. And then he told me a story about a friend that he's had a dream every night since Vietnam, every night without fail. He was in tracked vehicles, and you get in them through the back of the vehicle, and this boy would never come out. He'd call him every night. He'd never come out. Mm. And after he saw the plaques and he sat there, he called me at home, and he said, Lee, you'll never believe this. He said he came out. And what it did is it lifted everything off him. I have another veteran who the VA thought it was a bad place for him. It's become a home for him. And I like what he said when he was interviewed. He said, the Maine Military Museum is like being in a house of God. And the place has impact that even I had never suspected would ever happen. So it's quite a place.
And so your museum is the Maine Military Museum is in South Portland. It's kind of near Mill Creek in the park there.
No. We were there. We started
there.
Out there. It was a very small building.
Uh-huh.
And the city gave it to me for all practical purposes. And one day a gentleman came down. And he's a businessman, never served in the military. And he said, Lee, the city's going to throw you out of here. And I said, no, I have a lease. He said, no, did you ever read it? Which I hadn't. So he said, come see a building I want you to have. Well, he bought the VFW building in South Portland, 12,000 square feet, and I own it outright.
When did you move?
In 2008.
Okay.
And well, so it's huge now instead of the small place that it was.
Terrific. Every time I've driven by, I thought the old building was still yours. Yeah. I'm glad to have corrected that on the air. Dave, tell me about the museum that at Camp Keys that you curate.
We are the Maine Military Museum, and we've been in existence since 1988. We're trying now to establish a bigger, better museum in partnership with the Maine State Museum. And it's got quite a collection of things. Like in Mr. Humison's museum, a lot of folks come in and donate items from personal family members with stories connected and Maine connections to them. We have one helmet that was belonged to a person on the 29th Infantry Division, which was on the first wave on Omaha Beach.
Wow.
It has a bullet hole in the helmet because the bullet itself just ricocheted inside the helmet. The man survived.
Mm.
And so that's one of the other incredible stories.
These guys have gotten to tell a story of someone they've met. Do you have a story, something you'd like to share, somebody who's come into the museum who's made an impact on you?
We've actually had several. Most recently, it was last year, we had a guy that served in the 103rd Infantry Regiment in World War II in the Pacific come and tell his story. He spent the day telling his story to soldiers, and the soldiers could ask him questions about his experiences. And that was quite a revelation as to what he went through.
Mm. I am going to go now to Jamie Rice. Jamie is director of the Maine Historical Society Library. Jamie, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you.
I understand the Maine Historical Society is unveiling a pilot program today. Tell us about it.
So the Maine Historical Society's Maine Memory Network, in collaboration with the Veterans Administration Healthcare System, and specifically the Southern Maine VA Clinic in Saco, is launching a pilot program designed to capture the stories of Maine veterans of the Vietnam War. Essentially, we are launching this pilot program to capture those stories and make them available on the Maine Memory Network in a subsection called My Maine Stories, where the larger project is telling the individual stories of people from Maine in their experiences here in Maine and throughout the world. So we'd like to start this project with capturing those stories from Maine veterans of the Vietnam era.
And if you have a story to tell and you want to share as part of this project, what should you do?
You should contact the Maine Historical Society. We have a specific email address called mainstories@mainmemory.net, and that can lead you right to the project staff. And on our website, mainhistory.org, under the news section, there's some more information if you're interested in participating.
And what do you expect?
Well, we'd love to be able to hear from veterans. We'd like to share their stories, whether they're interested in sharing their stories in written form or whether they just want to have conversations with us. And then we'd love to be able to feature an image or an object, something that illustrates that story for an online platform. They don't have to donate that content, but you know, we do want to be able to share that widely. And it can be anything from a short blurb to a more in-depth story about their experiences, both during the war and in life afterward.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us today. Jamie Rice is the director of the Maine Historical Society Library. And a little later in the program, we'll hear from Dr. Karen Olson, who Jamie is working with on this project. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I know that you have a new project as well, Lee. Tell me what's going on. You said you sort of alluded to it earlier. You said you just opened the Vietnam Wing. But what do you have there at the museum that is really you're especially excited about?
Well, I built a cell from Hanoi. It is the only exact cell in the world outside of Hanoi. It's not a 16th of an inch off from the original cell. I have a friend who has great influence in Vietnam and in Hanoi with the Vietnamese government, and they allowed him to go into one of the last cells. He took over 200 photographs of it. He measured it to the nth degree, and I built it.
Can people go in it and feel what it would have been like?
No, but they can look in it. I mean, the door is open. I put a bar in because there are three mannequins wearing authentic POW uniforms. One of them is still saturated with blood and all kinds of other stains all over the thing. So I don't want people to touch them, but they can see them. And it's very haunting when you see it. But it's exact. I'm very proud of it because Wright-Patterson didn't do it. The Smithsonian didn't do it. Pensacola didn't do it. Theirs are just, and with all of their money, we did it for nothing, you know, but with all of their money, they've never done it the right way, in my humble opinion. But it's there for people to come see and learn from.
All right. And Peter Ogden, I understand that you are retired from your longtime career, but you have not stopped working for veterans. What are some of the projects you're working on right now?
Well, there's actually a new project that my Adrian Horn, who took my place as the Director of Veteran Services, just started. It's called a Veterans Legacy Project to preserve Maine's military history. And that project is actually taking stories, getting stories from veterans in World War II, Korea, Vietnam, or the current war, or family members about the loved one, if the loved one's gone, to collect that story. And those stories will be part of the Maine State Archives once they're finished and stuff. You know what I mean? So I think it's really exciting to me to start seeing everybody wanting to get the stories because Maine's military population is decreasing daily. I mean, we have less than 10% of the World War II veterans left, less than 25% of the Korean War veterans. About 60% of our Vietnam veterans are left. And so if we don't start doing this, which, you know, and start capturing stories, we're going to miss that story. And we're going to miss all of that things. But the other part I'm doing is I'm a co-chair of a new initiative for the VA. It's called My VA Communities, which really is to engage veterans and in the local communities and establish programs in the local communities to educate the community, but also to help veterans understand what's available in the local community for benefits and get VA benefits or state benefits. So it's really kind of unique for me to get out and talk to the veterans in the process.
Okay, so before you leave the building today, Peter, we're going to get links to both of those and put them on the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page and on our webpage. Of course, we want to hear your stories, and we're going to get things started with something pretty special that came into our email before the show even started. David Sanderson sent this in. He says, this is part of an interview I recorded some years ago with Emil Bill Bedard of Norway, Maine. Bill Bedard is no longer with us, but this song was recorded. What you're going to hear is Bill Bedard talking about when he wrote the song, and then we're going to hear part of the song, and then we'll go to a break, and then we'll come back and hear your story. So enjoy this, and thank you, David Sanderson, for sending it in.
This song was written during World War II on desert maneuvers when I was in the service, and I probably was about 20 years old or 21 years old, and we were in a tent out on the desert, and so I started playing this song close to that, and then this little Italian guy was laying back on his cot. So he says, wait a minute, he says, I'll put some words with that. Then after that, I made a record of it, and I mailed the record home to my wife in Maine, and she played the record a lot until it got about worn out. But it's the story of a soldier, a lonesome soldier, you know, that's alone and thinking about home and his sweetheart and whatever. And that's how the song come about.
Oh, the moon was bright, and I thought I'd write a letter. But here am I with nothing much to say. It must be me, it just can't be. I guess I'm feeling blue. Oh, the moon was bright, but where were you, my darling? If you were near, my life would be gone.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Maine law firm of Eaton Peabody. Statewide practice, local service, with offices in Augusta, Bangor, Brunswick, Ellsworth, and Portland. Revision Energy, committed to helping Maine communities go solar from Kittery to Bangor, from Bar Harbor to Bethel. More at revisionenergy.com. And Casella, dedicated to improving air quality for all Mainers through a commitment to reduce its carbon footprint. Casella, giving resources new life.
This is bad. This is very, very bad.
On the next Fresh Air, Shonda Rhimes, the creator of the TV shows Scandal and Grey's Anatomy, and the executive producer of How to Get Away with Murder, will talk about lots of things, ranging from why her first series is set in a hospital to why she adopted three children as a single mother. She has a new memoir. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock.
Alvin York came home from World War I, one of America's most decorated soldiers. Shunning the spotlight, he's well-remembered in his community for building a school.
We're Sergeant York's own. When you come into our school, we expect people to be exceptional.
Remembering the legacy of a renowned World War I vet later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can hear All Things Considered this afternoon at 4.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Stories of Maine Veterans. With me in the studio, Lee Humiston is the museum curator at the Maine Military Museum and Learning Center. Dave Googins is the president of the Maine Military Historical Society, and he has been to Normandy in the past couple years. Great. Peter Ogden is the former Maine Director of Veterans Affairs, and he is still involved in many projects relating to veterans. We invite you to join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Especially encourage you to post to our Facebook page, because I know there's no way we're going to get to all of the stories in this hour that we have. But if people can post stories on our Facebook page, it can be a resource that others can go to and read about them. We're going to start by going to Bill in Sun City Center, Florida. Is this General Libby?
It is, Jennifer.
How are you?
I'm well. How are all of you today?
We're great, Bill.
Great, sir.
It's so nice of you to call in, and it's probably not rainy and cool for Veterans Day in Sun City, Florida, is it?
It is not. It's 86 and sunny, and I wouldn't have said that if you hadn't asked.
So thank you so much for calling in. Do you have a memory to share, Bill, or a thought on this Veterans Day?
You know, I don't want to do that. I want to save that for others, but I do want to thank three of my favorite guys in Maine. We're in the studio with you this morning. Lee had the opportunity to spend some time at his museum this summer and actually talked to a group of high school students, junior high school students.
Yep.
We'll look forward to repeating that next year. Dave is doing great work with our historical society, and what can you say about Pete Ogden? Had the opportunity to talk to Peter this week when he was in D.C., continuing his work on behalf of veterans even after he's retired. So I simply wanted to call in, Jennifer, and say, hey, thanks for what you're doing today and recognizing those of us who've served and are currently serving. And thanks in particular to those three guys who are doing everything in their power to make sure that this story's not lost as we move along.
Thank you, General Bill Libby, for calling into Maine Calling today. We're going to move from Sun City, Florida to Portland, Maine. And Liz, hi, Liz, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi.
Hi, Liz, go ahead.
I wanted to tell a few things about my father, who was one of the youngest soldiers to fight in World War II, and now lives in Brunswick and will turn 90 in January and still going strong. I have one little story about when he was fighting, which was so impressive. He at one point had to crawl on the ground after a battle under potential enemy fire in order to collect dog tags from the German soldiers who had been killed in the battle. Another memory is when he took us to France about 15 years ago to see some of the places where he had fought, and we went to a German cemetery, and he found the gravestone of a 17-year-old German who had been born on the same day that he was and just sort of stood there and said, "There but for the grace of God."
Wow.
Yeah.
Liz, I really appreciate you calling. I'm going to say goodbye, though, because your connection isn't the best, and we're having a hard time hearing you. But I really appreciate you calling and sharing the story of your father and in World War II. We're going to move now to Dr. Karen Olson. She's also involved in the Vietnam Vet Stories Project that we heard about earlier. And Karen, you're a psychiatrist at the VA Saco Community-Based Outpatient Clinic. How did this idea come about?
Well, hello, Jennifer, and guests and listeners. I want to tell you I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about this project that has become very dear to my heart. Yes, I am a psychiatrist at the VA Outpatient Clinic in Saco, and I see veterans of all ages and all the different eras. As I first saw Vietnam veterans when I started at the VA clinic 2 years ago, they didn't tell me too much about their war experiences. But as we got to know each other, they have told me a lot of their stories and histories and how their experiences in Vietnam continue to affect them. For example, I recently talked to a veteran whose neighbors put up some tiki torch lights, and the veteran didn't understand why he had a very negative reaction to them until he realized that they reminded him of the torches along the river that he patrolled at night in a small boat. As veterans told me their stories, a few brought in pictures, and I started to think about the fact that they, as well as I, are in their 60s and that their stories could be lost before too many years go by. When I talked with the veterans, started asking them about photos or letters or journals or diaries that they might have, some said, well, the letters that my mom sent rotted in the jungle. Some said that, yes, they had them, had pictures in their living room. Some said, a lot said they had pictures somewhere, but they moved a number of times, and they were in attics and basements, and they thought they might be able to find them. So basically, I'm a history major, and I just didn't want their histories to scatter and disappear, and I thought about how can their stories be preserved. I knew of the Maine Historical Society. I called them, and Jamie Rice, who spoke earlier, talked with me, and I didn't know about some of the other organizations, the people who are guests there today. But in any event, the Maine Historical Society was very interested in the idea and are going forward with the project.
Great, Jamie. We're gonna put a link on the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page, as well as our webpage, not only to your project, but also the projects that Peter Ogden was telling us about. And you know, I think all four of you share this commitment to veterans telling their stories. Why, Peter Ogden, do you think it's so important that these stories be shared and people not keep them inside and take them with them to the grave?
Well, I think part of it is for a lot of veterans who can, at least if we can get them to talk about their stories, the healing process can happen, start then. You know, for a lot of us that keep these things inside, I still feel a lot of those angst from the days that we remember them from. But if we can talk about them and get veterans to talk about them and get the story out, it helps that healing process begin. It's like Lee mentioned about the gentleman and looking for his friend to come out of the back of the APC. Finally, when he could actually see something, that helped him get to the next step. And that's really talking about those stories.
All right. Well, Dr. Karen Olson, thanks so much for calling in, and good luck with the project. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mpbn.net. And, of course, the MPBN Main Calling Facebook page is a great place to share stories. Here's an email from Hugh. He's writing from Brunswick, Maine. He says, I went to Vietnam on the General Mann troop ship in August of 1965, 50 years ago. We sailed under the Golden Gate Bridge into the Pacific Ocean. A day or two later, the rolling ocean made most of us seasick. The weather cleared, and we could see flying fish off the bow floating above dark blue water. When we arrived in Vietnam, my first sergeant remarked how much it looked like Korea. For me, at least, the comparison did not prove as dire as I feared when he made that remark. In a few weeks, my wife and I will be returning for a tour with some college classmates. David, you've gone back to Normandy. How important is it to go back to these places?
It gave me a better perspective on what happened and perhaps what my father experienced. When you can see the lay of the land and the terrain features and the dense hedgerows, you kind of understand why people are apprehensive going down the roads, and particularly at night and things like that. So it gives you a real perspective. Also, I was there during the 70th anniversary of D-Day, and I had an opportunity to talk with a veteran of the 4th Infantry Division who rode on tanks in my father's unit, and asked him some questions about, you know, did they ever know where they were at any given time? And they really had no clue. It was just a major operation, and they just knew the names of the big places, and that was it. They had no idea where they were any given day.
Mm. Wow. We're going to go to Augusta and Michael. Hi, Michael. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, and have a good Veterans Day, right? We don't necessarily say happy Veterans Day. I'm calling for two reasons. So my call's dual purpose. One is to advocate for homeless veterans whom I have the honor of working with and have had the honor of working with here in the state of Maine with my employer, Veterans Inc., on both housing and employment assistance throughout the state of Maine, primarily in north and north central Maine. They are present in our community. There are a good number of them, and there are resources for them, although there also are unmet needs that they do have. I wanted to mention not only Veterans Inc., whom I work for, but also a few other organizations that are helping our homeless veterans in the state, namely Preble Street Veterans Housing Services. They do tremendous work and have for decades. Also, in terms of monetary assistance, a couple of nonprofits, Goodwill Industries has a veterans fund that has been very helpful to the homeless veterans that I've had the pleasure of working with this year. And also, Easter Seals Maine has a veterans count fund for post 9/11 veterans, of which there are more than a few here in the state of Maine. So they do great work, and just on this Veterans Day, we should always remain cognizant that while stories of service are great and important to capture, the veterans in our community, some of them at least, are still in need, as we like to say. Secondarily, I'd like to advocate for the Army National Guard and the Guard and Reserve, the Air Guard as well. There are an awful lot of us, and I served for almost 8 years during the Persian Gulf era in the Army National Guard. There are an awful lot of us in the state of Maine because there are no prominent active duty bases in the state of Maine other than Portsmouth, Kittery, Naval Shipyard. Because of that, we have an awful lot of Guard and Reserve. They don't necessarily get overlooked on Veterans Day, but they sometimes don't get prominent mention. My own story is such that I grew up in Central Maine, a small community of Whitefield, attended high school in Augusta, and on my 17th birthday, as soon as I was able to enlist, I did enlist in the Army National Guard right at Camp Keys. And I was so young that my mom, who's a Army veteran herself, she served as a nurse, as a WAC, in the Women Army Corps, had to sign for me as well. So I did what's referred to as a split option program. Peter and a few others are probably aware of that, where my junior year at Coney High School, I went to basic training that summer at Fort Dix, New Jersey, came back for my senior year of high school. And then that following summer, after I graduated high school, I went for my advanced training at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, ultimately went to college, and then became an officer through the Army National Guard and the Officer Candidate School program. So there are an awful lot of Guard and Reserve. General Libby, Peter Ogden, great advocates for them, and I strongly support the work they have done.
Michael, thanks so much for calling in. Peter, the so many of the services that Michael mentioned, the Bureau of Veterans Affairs sort of collates, if not for a better word, and is a great place to start if you'd like to know what kind of services are available, sort of one-stop shopping to help refer out to something that's close to your home, correct?
Yes, it is. Bureau of Veterans Services as a state's advocate for Maine's veterans and can help them obtain state benefits or federal benefits or file claims for VA or enroll in health care or whatever. Our challenge is there are 7 field offices around the state of Maine. And Maine's a big state, and it's awful hard for a lot of veterans to get to access points to get health care or get help, whatever. So our challenge is trying to make sure that we reach out and continue to think about all those veterans. And we talk about the World War II and the Korean veterans, and as we get close to winter, we have a lot of issues about trying to get to places because just being able to drive for the age of the people or the weather is going to be an impact on them too. So it's really, really important.
All right. Thanks, Michael, for your call. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. We're going to take a second break, but we'll be back in just a little bit. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Sweetser, helping children, adults, and families address mental health and substance abuse issues since 1828. Learn more at sweetser.org. And CEI, working with small and medium-sized businesses focusing on economy, equity, and environment. CEIMaine.org.
The romance of war is seductive.
We did exciting things.
But the reality can create pain that lasts forever.
Since that night, we've never been the same, any of us.
Join us for We've Never Been the Same, a war story from the public radio website transom.org. The story of one night of battle and the decades that followed.
You can hear that programming coming up at 1 o'clock after Maine Calling.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Republican presidential contenders hold their fourth debate, how the candidates did, and new questions about whether today's televised debates are serving voters and the democratic process.
Join us for the Diane Rehm Show this afternoon at 2.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, stories of service from men and women in Maine. In the studio with me, Lee Humiston, museum curator at the Maine Military Museum and Learning Center in South Portland. Peter Ogden is the former Maine director of the Bureau of Veterans Affairs. And Dave Googans is president of the Maine Military Historical Society and is in charge of the museum at Camp Keys. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Before we go back to the phones, though, Lee and Dave, why don't you tell me what you hope to do next, what you hope will happen next as far as military history and military museums in Maine?
Well, Lee's museum and ours kind of do the same thing. We are dedicated to the same purpose. So we're going to look at seeing how we can partner to advocate for each other and see how we can mutually benefit each other's museums at this point.
Okay. We'll go to the phones. We're going to go to Westbrook and Dennis. Hi, Dennis. Go ahead. Dennis, are you there? I'm sorry. We can't hear you at all. We can't hear you at all. We're going to move on. We're going to go to Samantha, who is calling from Portland. Hi, Samantha. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I love your program, and I listen to it a lot. I'm calling really to just give thanks to my father today. His name is Gain Francis, and he is almost 66. He is a veteran of the Vietnam War. He was a Ranger during 1969 and 1970, and he was drafted. He grew up on the streets in Auburn, Maine, and really being drafted essentially and kind of ironically, kind of changed his life. So I had the great honor of returning to Vietnam with him about 10 years ago after my first semester at Bowdoin, and we traveled all the way from the south up through the north and saw his old base camp, flew into the same airport where he flew in country. And I'm a high school English teacher at Brunswick High School, and for the past few years, he's come in and spoken to my students as we read The Things I Carried by Tim O'Brien and other war stories, and I just feel so lucky that he has been willing to do that for me. And I think it's important for younger people to continue to learn about veterans and the Vietnam War era.
Samantha, that's a terrific story. What do you think your kids come away with after your dad comes to visit, the students in your class?
Well, for me, they've been hands down probably the most special days that I've ever taught in a classroom, where I think sometimes those stories seem kind of removed, and when they meet a real person, and my dad is kind of this unassuming, shorter, smaller guy, and when they learn that he did these kind of incredible things, I think it just makes it real for them, and it means a lot too. I think that, you know, they see me and they see him there, and that he's willing to take the time to do that, and he doesn't like to talk about it very much, but I think those experiences have been great for him too. And he's walked away meeting some kids who are, you know, joining, you know, the service. And it's been a mutually successful experience, I think, for all involved.
Well, great. Samantha, thank you for calling in to Maine Calling today. We have an email from Carrie in Portland. When I see a member of the military in uniform in public, I'm often tempted to nod or smile and say thank you for your service. But I have no idea if this is appropriate. I have not served in the military myself, and I don't know what it might feel like to hear such words coming from a civilian on the street. Any advice? When I see a member of the military in uniform in public, what should I do? What would you say to her?
Yeah, I'd like to say to veterans myself, when I meet them, or that the older generations of veterans, I shake their hands, say thank you for your service. You know, and I think it's an important part. People get to recognize, at least people get recognized for their service and their sacrifice. And a lot of times people don't really know what they've done, but at least having somebody say thank you and smile at you is really important. That can mean a lot more than a lot of the other things that people do, I mean.
Okay. You all, either of you have thoughts on that? Dave, Lee?
Well, I've been fortunate. It's taken 6 years, but South Portland High School, Junior High School are finally bringing the kids. We had 100 of them last month. We've got 150 of them coming in the next 3 days. And the kids, it's amazing how they come away from what they've learned when they see the museum. And it shook up the school system because I've tried so. It took all those years to get them to bring the kids. And when the kids started writing letters that the teachers read, it just amazed them. When kids would say, I learned more in 2 hours at the museum than 2 years in school.
Hmm.
Yeah. And so they're all coming, and they get to talk to the veterans, and the guys love it to be able to talk to these kids, as General Libby mentioned.
And we've had a couple schools that have requested to talk with current soldiers that have participated in Iraq and Afghanistan, and so we're able to have those soldiers come in and have their questions answered, and they walk away with a whole totally different impression of what's going on today.
Jennifer, both museums are focused on educating people and the children like that. I think it's really important because less than 1% of the nation's young are serving today. And as future generations go on, in World War II, we had 10% of Maine in uniform. So everybody was participating in World War II, in Korea less, and in Vietnam less. So I think it's really important as we go on, if they're going to learn about veterans, they're going to learn about veterans in the school because they're not necessarily joining the military as much anymore.
We're going to go to Gorham. And John, hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hello?
Hi, John. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. I appreciate that call from the gentleman from Whitefield, and he mentioned something that has always been a real concern of mine. There's all kinds of programs available, but yet there's no way of ever finding out about them. I mean, the Maine Veterans Services does a fairly decent job, but there's a ton more programs available, and there doesn't seem to be much of an effort being made to publicize all these programs and all these just programs that are available for veterans for all kinds of reasons. And I ran across that situation in a program that helped me directly just because I was having a conversation with somebody else, and it was a collateral comment to that conversation. And I wish someone would look into finding out where these programs are and at least put them in some kind of a database.
Okay. So I'm going to let Peter respond to that.
That has been the challenge that as when I was a state director is getting our arms around all of those programs out there. I can tell you at the state level, we know about a lot of them, and we try to advertise and put them on our website and other things. But there's a lot of things happening in Maine that we have no idea about what's going on. And I think that's the challenge we have is how do we get our arms around all of those programs and all those community things that are happening that help veterans or assist veterans and be able to let veterans know about that. So we're really working on that. And our new initiative, My VA Community, or help putting Maine Veterans First, I think we'll be able to do that because we're going to be looking and reaching out and doing that stuff in the future.
That's exactly what you're trying to do, right?
Yeah.
Thank you,
yes.
Peter. We're going to go to David calling from South Berwick. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. I went in country from a ship off the coast during the Tet, and they didn't Mike boat coxswains. And I served, and I didn't want my family to know because my father had a bad heart. So I never told anybody until my brother found the Purple Heart when he came to visit. And I had never told anybody, but I spent two sessions with a psychiatrist at SACO, who really cleared up a lot for me and made me feel human again. I think that's a service that's very important. I'd also like to mention that it was important to receive a flag of Maine when I was in country. It was, I think, Governor Curtis that had that done, and it was very important. Thank you.
David, it's really interesting to hear what you have to say. It was just two visits with the psychiatrist that made all the difference for you.
It was. I mean, I'd held everything in for so long that I think I was going to explode.
What would you say to others who have not accessed the services available to them?
Go. Go.
Great call.
It's very important.
Well, I so appreciate you being willing to call and tell your story today. And I know, David, that there are people out there who will call because of you. Thank you. We're going to go to Liz, who's calling from Orono. Hi, Liz.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm calling in honor of my brother, John E. Hall, who served proudly and in Vietnam. And he was medically discharged with honor a couple years after his service. It was that, I think, that led to his unfortunate and, I think, untimely death at 54 in 1999. He would be with us today as a 70-year-old had he not contracted illness in Vietnam, for which he subsequently was medically discharged. I say this because I honor all of the veterans who have served, including my brother, my uncle, uncles, but I want everyone to be aware that you, as a veteran, as a person who serves in the armed forces and their loved ones, need to be very alert to finding resources, because it's not always obvious. And while the armed forces were very eager to have my brother, and he served, as I said, proudly and willingly, what his subsequent outcome was not so good. And I think people need to pay attention to to finding the services that are promised when you sign up after the event. So that's all I really wanted to say.
And I know that the Bureau for Veterans Affairs, I know the National Guard, I know all sorts of people try to get in touch with and sort of let veterans know when they've come back what's available to them. But, Peter, sometimes it's hard to reach them. People at that point in their life often don't want the services. It's later, right?
Well, I think for the Vietnam veterans, when they came back, the VA was not as willing to talk to us. And help us for the ones that weren't severely disabled. They took very good care of those. But the other ones that came back, and they weren't structured really to take care of a lot of the veterans today. Today is much different. The VA is looking for all of the veterans. We work hard to make sure that the veterans get reach out to them as much as we can. But a lot of times, we're a much more mobile society today. You know, we think the veteran comes back to Maine because we get a copy of his discharge, but he may be somewhere else, or he may have been home, and by the time we find out he's around, he's moved somewhere else to get a job or gone to school somewhere else. So I think today's much more difficult. And the way we communicate today with the younger generation of veterans versus the older generation of veterans is more of a challenge for us, too, to be able to reach out and make sure that they know that we care about them, we want to welcome them back, but also to be able to help them when they're ready to access the benefits.
All right. Yeah. Well, this show has gone by so quickly. I know there are many of you on the phone and sending emails who have not been able to get through today. And I'd really encourage you to go onto the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page and post your stories. You don't have to be on Facebook to go to the page. MPBN Maine Calling /Facebook. Peter, Dave, and Lee, thank you all for joining us today. Peter Ogden, the former Maine Director of the Bureau of Veterans Affairs, Dave Guggins, President of the Maine Military Historical Society, and Lee Humiston is Museum Curator at the Maine Military Museum and Learning Center. We will post links to all of that on our Facebook page. Also on the Maine Calling website, we keep updating the products mentioned on Monday's Maine Gift Guide Show. John Keimel ran the board today. Sam Moran answered your calls. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, we'll look at the link between nutrition and cancer. Join host Keith Shortall and a panel of medical experts as they discuss just how bad bacon really is for you and what else you need to know about nutrition and cancer. As we say goodbye, we're listening to Bill Bedard of Norway, Maine. No longer with us, World War II vet. This was recorded by David Sanderson. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on MPBN.
Until we meet and